because there have been, and I shouldn't say any number of accounts, most of the people who have come to me about last night, and I've asked them to present the synopsis of what I said, so have represented it accurately, but because I fear that some people will misrepresent it, and the shir may eventually be posted, but I want to read very briefly both some summary and clarification. So I read. I wish to clarify a few points in regard to the shir and to my position. If one wishes to read a full discussion of the issue and perspective to which I subscribe, they should look at the article in Chakira by Rabbis Michael Broyd and Shlomo Brody in 2011. There is little, if anything, both in their discussion and conclusion with which I disagree. The need to clarify is motivated by the fact that a number of different conclusions as to my position have already been drawn by people, some accurately and some not. I am at fault because I didn't summarize in a clear fashion at the end, so I'm taking the opportunity to repeat and clarify at this juncture. Number one, I don't see there as being any technical halachic barriers to the ordination of women or women serving in the pulpit. There certainly are legitimate questions that could be raised in this arena, primarily in the position of the Rambam on Srara, but I think that there are any number of sfeikos in the issue. Is the rabbinate truly a Srara? Does communal acceptance ameliorate certain concerns? The Rambam is a minority opinion on an issue with no real history of psak that mitigate this concern. Number two, with regards to Ashkafic matters, I am not sure how to evaluate them, particularly the issue of Masorah. It is a concern that has been invoked repeatedly, but I, as is true for many others, rabbis included, am not sure how to understand this claim. It is hard to describe there being a Masorah on an issue whose real possibility and discussion has only been considered in the last century. If we are going to oppose female clergy on the grounds of Masorah, a clearer explanation of what this means is necessary. Number three, with regards to practical concerns, there are both benefits and downsides to women's ordination that need to be considered very carefully. On the one hand, increasing the talent pool would be beneficial, but the limitations on a number of rites that rabbis are often called upon to do, even if they are not part of the core role of rabbi, and the concern of transgressing of those halachic scriptures, the slippery slope, may be a real one. I address the issue of the RCA resolution towards the end of the shiur, and I think it is worth restating. Number one, I don't think, even if one agrees with the contents of the resolution, that it was productive in reissuing it. Number two, I believe that the resolution has things backwards. As I understand it, expanded roles for women are fine, as long as they are not called rabbis or anything like that, or doing rabbinical things. At the end, it states that the Yoetzet program and GPATs are not included in this discussion. I believe that the issue is not the ordaining of women or giving a rabbinic title. Rather, the discussion needs to focus on what are appropriate roles that women can assume to advance the spiritual growth of the community. Only when that has been defined can the appropriate training, ordination, title be decided upon. And it should be noted in this context that the Yoetzot, and note I think that the program is a tremendous benefit to Klal Yisrael, and I wholeheartedly support it, are fulfilling what is classically a rabbinic role, answering Sheilot. As regards to what should be appropriate roles for women, I stated that the needs of the community are determinative, not the aspirations of individuals. And while I prefer not to judge any specific person's motivations, change should be motivated by the needs of the community and not by a desire to adhere to any external ideological vision. I began this year by talking about the Netziv in the Hamek Sh'ala, in which he notes that actions and deeds that create machlokas in the community need to be measured against two factors. Number one, are they being done lishma? And number two, do the benefits which accrue outweigh the negative consequences of creating machlokas? As per the first concern, I prefer not to judge people's motivations, but rather give them the benefit of the doubt. As to the second, I believe that people who do things to advance the possibility of female clergy and those who oppose them need to consider carefully both what they do/say and how they do/say it. I also noted that if there's to be an expanded role for women, it has to be done appropriately. And that means expanding learning for the girls already in high school, followed by the creation of a serious Beit Midrash program at Stern College for women during college years, much like MYP, followed by multiple years of study after college. Shortcuts are unacceptable. By the time appropriate structures have been created, we'll have more opportunity to figure out what the appropriate roles and titles for women might be. I closed by stating that I believe that appropriate change must happen slowly and behetzneah. The Midrash observes that the first luchos were broken because they were accompanied with great fanfare, and that the second time around, God chose to do things behetzneah. Change, even if permitted halachically, which tears apart the community, is counterproductive, and in my opinion, as I stated, is a violation of a lo yech korach v'cha'adaso. I think that going forward, aside from what I suggested in the previous paragraph, the best way of formulating what I think should be expressed by the closing comments in the article by Rabbis Broyd and Brody. I'm not going to read it to you, but you can go back to the article. It's available online, Chakira, I believe, 2011, in their conclusions, and I think that accurately represents my opinion as to how the matter should be approached practically. I hope, if I wasn't clear last night, and I certainly did not summarize, I hope this makes it absolutely clear where I stand on this issue. Let's now turn to our topic du jour. Alex?
A very quick question.
Yes.
Last comment was made about the Rushba being the major, I forget.
I stated, and we are now learning Hilchos Nida, and I think as you can see, as you go through the Beis Yosef, and I think this is the first, not everybody has gotten through the Siman, but this is the first really large chunk, you can see how much influence the Rashba exerted or had, certainly on Yoredeya, but I think the Rashba, if I had to pick a single Rishon that is most influential on the Beis Yosef, it's the Rashba. And I haven't said this, I think, yet this year. It's not only in Yoredeya, the Rashba and Torah Sabayis, but I believe that the single most quoted Chuvos of any of the Chuvos HaRishonim, and I think it's the only, well, it's an only, it's not the only Chuvos, happens to be the Chuvos HaRashba. When you look in the printed editions of the Chuvos HaRashba, you will always, firstly, we have multiple editions. There were the Chuvos HaRashba in some editions were Miyuchasos LaRamban. When you see Chuvos HaRamban, we may have some real Chuvos HaRamban, but the typical Chuvos HaRamban are, in fact, Chuvos HaRashba, Miyuchasos LaRamban, and the Beis Yosef notes this in his Hakdama. I think he says he will quote them as Chuvos HaRamban, even though he knows that they are Chuvos HaRashba. When you look in at least the sort of the common printed edition of the Chuvos HaRashba, you will see, almost, not every tshuva, because it's not true in every tshuva, but every tshuva where it's quoted in Beis Yosef, you will say, huva, you will see, huva be Beis Yosef, be simen X. I think the tshuvas harivash and the marik are also frequently quoted, but I believe if you were to look, the tshuvas rashba might be the most comprehensively quoted tshuvas. That's my impression. But even without that, I would say certainly over them, and I think maybe even generally, the rashba might have been the most influential rishon, even though in the Beis Yosef taxonomy, it's the Rambam, the Rif, and the Rush.
Meaning, so that really was my question, was that seems to be not square with his statement.
Correct, but I think that you will see in Yoredeya at least certainly the first, I would say the first couple of the first two halakim which are modeled upon the Torah Sabayis, I think for that reason alone the Rashba became tremendously influential.
But does that just mean that he's citing him by name more, or that means that the actual positions are more reflective of his positions?
You can do a study. My impression is partially because the Rashba speaks on every issue that's being addressed, and let's say the Rambam doesn't. But I think also partially because the Rashba tends to represent, the Rashba has a lot in front of him. In other words, he has the benefit of being a little bit of a basaroi to most of the Gedolei HaRishonim, right? I don't know if I could name a Rishon after the Rashba who even comes remotely close to his prominence. In other words, you have the Ritva, you have the Ran, the Beis Yosef does give the Ran a very nice title here. I forget what the title is, somewhere buried in the Siman. But I think that when you look at all the major Rishonim, the Balei HaTosfos, not the Rush. The Rush is a little young in the Rashba, but the Balei HaTosfos, the Rambam, the Rif, the Ramban, the Ravid, so they all predate the Rashba, and I think that that's what being Hilchos HaKavasroi, in a sense, represents. So I think that is why, maybe I'm wrong, maybe empirically, if you were to study the issue, you would find something different, but I think that the Rashba is maybe the most dominant Rishon. David? Well, that is, we don't paskin like the Torah. We paskin like the Beis Yosef with the comments of the Ramah, you know, in Shulchan Aruch. But I think I may have stated this once this year, but I should repeat: the Beis Yosef is the Sefer Psach. The Shulchan Aruch are the Cliff Notes. People have asked me, I haven't seen it as much in the Siman, but most of the time, the Beis Yosef on issues where he has to paskin will say v'hachi naktin, and he says it in the Beis Yosef, and he almost never differs from that in the Shulchan Aruch. But the real Sefer Psach is the Beis Yosef. So the tour, yes, the tour very much probably gives much greater weight to his father, but nonetheless, I don't think that's not the Beis Yosef's conclusion. That's the tour's conclusion. Okay, does that address the question? Okay. All right. So anyway, I'm going to read, and I want to try to go through it sort of quickly as we can, just because. Because there's a lot of material, and I would like to... I know that not everybody's going to get through all the Beis Yosef. Ideally, you would, but I appreciate how many hours it took me to read through slowly, granted while in motion, how long it took me to get through all the material. And I would like to do another Chazara, but I feel that almost all of it I got, and this is not my first time learning. So I understand this is the biggest siman. And a lot of it is, as we mentioned before, because of the change in the clothing that we wear, and particularly in the fact that we wear underwear today is a general rule and highly advisable. Thus, I think that it's not, most of it doesn't come up lamaisa. Being tole is kind of irrelevant because you know where the blood came from. Yes?
Do
Judah.
Remember Salmowski's book, he talks about polyester and how, like, even, like, Prabhupada said that even, like, 100% polyester might have some cotton in it, which is apparently Kabotuba, so I don't quite understand, you know, how this helps.
How what helps?
In terms of tummy, meaning that if most, if underwear is made from cotton,
so you can wear color underwear. Well, no. There are two different questions here. I'm not talking about solving the problem of avoiding semen. I mean, knowing where the kesem came from. In other words, in a world in which women didn't wear underwear, men didn't wear underwear either, so you never knew where the kesem came from. But in a world in which we're, in other words, if you think about the Rashba's discussion, that when you find when you find the kesem on the basar, and you don't find it on the clothing, right there, we're almost certainly going to attribute, if it's below the belt for sure, and even above the belt in Nizdakra, we're going to attribute it to coming Mimikora. Why? Because if it came from the outside, it should have been on the clothing also. Right? So just taking that logic as a rule, if a woman finds blood anywhere on her body or her clothing, if it wasn't on her underwear, it's virtually certain that it didn't come Minamachar. Right? By the same token, if it's on her underwear, in most places on the underwear, it's clear where the dam came from. Right? Therefore, the business of tliya is almost an irrelevant issue. What will matter in terms of dealing with this is the size of the kesem, the color of the underwear, the material it's made of, and that was what your question was. That's a different discussion, but that takes us to a totally separate place. Yehuda?
So if we care about the size of the kesem, doesn't that mean that we're treating these halachos as formalistic halachos?
Well, no. The only issue that's left, I think it's clear, and I don't think this is a suffix, that if you find dam in a, if she's wearing underwear and you find dam in her leg, and there's no, the underwear's absolutely clean, you know the dam came from elsewhere. Period, end of discussion. The only difficulty we have, and someone showed me, Rabbi Sabalowski tries to sort of address this in this book, but he recognizes the difficulty, is that once it's a question of knowing where it came from, if you're wearing underwear, you know exactly where it comes from, why should, even if it's less than a gris, if it's less than a gris, why should it matter? There's the whole reason why less than a gris matters normally, because we're told on a macholas. But if you know it's not a macholas, right? If you can tell, let's say, that the blood is on the inside of the underwear, well, you know it could, there's no macholas. There's a Gemara, actually, about this that's quoted, about osamakum badaku eitza macholas. It's a Gemara, I forget where it's in the first paragraph, I'm not sure. The Beis Yosef quotes it. So that makes, I think it's pashut in that case. You know it wasn't the macholas. Why should you be allowed to be tola up to a gris? So he tries to sort of defend that. It's hard to understand that. Logic would dictate that you shouldn't be able to tola, and the only issue would be, is the begin mekabel tuma, and is the garment colored? Because that is a din. That's irrelevant, even if we know that it came from the makar, if it's only a kesem, and it's not a re'iyah, there's no hargasha, and it's on a davar shein mekabel tuma, or it's on a colored garment, then it's irrelevant. Then it's not. Then the kesem is tahar. Yes?
It is hard to understand that. But once we are told on a machola, why can't we be told on a shukatabachi? In the same way we're told on a machola.
Well, because even when you're only a tola and a shuk shel tabachim, again, you have to just take the cases that exist already. If it's on the basar, and it's not on a beged, you cannot be tola b'shuk shel tabachim. And it's not a gzeiras ha-gemara, gzeiras ha-rishonim, basar versus beged, because if you note, the one case, if the makkah is in her body, we're allowed to be tola if it's on the basar or not on the beged. Why? Because it's a reason why it would be on the basar and not the beged. So if you find a woman has dam, you know, on the undergarment, and there's no dam on her outer garments, you cannot be tola on an external source. No. But what I'm saying is that you cannot, unless you want to argue that we're told on a macholas bosamakom, so then you have no, in other words, even in Naniach, that somehow we've decided we're always tola, less than a gris, on a macholas. Even if we decide that, it doesn't mean that for all other purposes we're not going to use the same, you know, the same rules. In other words, beged and baso rules are still going to apply, right? It's one thing to say, macholas seems to be this general tliya, right? Macholas are universal. So for some reason, we continue doing that, even if I think it's difficult, if nothing's so plausible. But beyond, once you get beyond the issue of macholas, every other tliya, like they never told us, there is a macholas in the Mishnah. Is it true only if she knows she killed a macholas, or even if she doesn't know? So we might accept that we do paskin, even if she doesn't know. And the macholas is a gzeiras ha-mishnah, and we hold not like Rabban Shimon Gamliel, but like Rabbi Chinim and Antignus, and therefore you can always be tol on a macholas. But outside of macholas, if lo avra b'shuk shel tabachim, you can't be tol b'shuk shel tabachim. Right? If there are no chazerim there, you can't be told on the chazerim. If the dam, if aver b'shuk shel tabachem, but the dam is on the basar and not on the beged, you can't be told. So for these purposes, a beged be'osa makom is like being on the basar in terms of the shuk shel tabachem. Even if you want to tell me, maybe there's a macholas there. So the only tliya you have, and even that, as I said, is very difficult to defend, is that even if you know that the kesem came in a makar, it seems we're going to assume that if it's less than a gris, that you told them a macholas, as difficult as that is. That's totally different. Now you're giving me a real tliya that's possible, you know, that it got there. I mean,
how is it possible it got on the undergarment and she's wearing pants?
So I would argue that if it's impossible there, I don't know. That's an interesting, what's that? Yeah, probably not. So again, you could argue whether we say that Chazra Turmas Lios Kegris, the language that the Torah quotes, I think, from the Rashba, we could debate that issue. Since I don't think we've been dealing with, I think the minog here, there is no minog because we haven't had bed bugs for a long time. I know they're making a comeback. So anyway.
So should we spread them to
are you trying to follow in the footsteps of my student from 5 years ago? I understood. Okay. Anyway, so, Zach?
I was just saying, you said
Kach, that I believe this seems to be the practice, yes.
Since they mentioned underwear, has I said anything about that?
I don't know. Maybe their poskim would differ. It's hard to... It is difficult to explain. And Rabbi Sabalowski offers what is actually a very... a reasoned explanation there, but it's still a chiddush. In other words, it's that has to do with the fact that Ksamim really was about Tumah V'Tahara, not about Nida. And the fact that they would go there on Ksamim by Nida, if I remember correctly, I saw it only briefly, the fact that they would go there on Ksamim by Nida was only Xera because of Taros, and therefore, whatever, follows from that's why we're not Machmir.
Doesn't that seem the whole Sugya follows based on what's likely to be...
Zach, you don't have to persuade me, right?
I got to persuade somebody.
I'm in agreement with you.
But
Alex.
We also have a principle that we try to be made as much as possible. Yeah. So it's, in formalistic, no, I understand that it's unlikely, but in formalistic terms, if we have this tool, are we forced to throw it away because we've always had it?
Well, again, this tool, in theory, is only a product of the fact that the macholos were common.
I understand, but if you remove yourself from that...
Would that common?
Yes, the answer is yes.
Every time there would be a spot, you would just be told it. I thought...
They were pretty. It's clear when you read the literature of the Rishonim, they were very common.
They
were shchiach, very much shchiach. So
I don't want to call it suspending disbelief, but if we have a principle of low flow, so maybe we apply a low flow type of logic because.
So I agree that methodologically speaking, you know, and as relates perhaps to a topic that I'll be addressing next Monday night, I hope without need to clarify afterwards, but I never know. So maybe I should just state in advance my position that b'derech klal davrash b'minyan tzarech b'minyan achar latiro, and when Chazal made gzera with a low plug, even if the reason doesn't apply anymore, as a general rule, there are some rare exceptions, but as a general rule, the gzera still applies. So I stated it for the record now in advance. I hope it will be an interesting conversation. So the answer is, I would agree with you in theory, but I don't think that this is a low plug. When you read the Rishonim and you read through the Siman, you see that lot. In other words, the Balei Tosfos, the Gemara said, if it's a city in which there are chazerim, then chazerim are muhsak to splatter blood. But the Balei Tosfos came along and said, and I don't even think this was a practical issue. My normal rule is the only time Davar Shebaminyan is batel, even when the reason is batel, is when Klal Yisrael decides to put it aside. In other words, it's always post facto. But Tosfos there is not operating post facto. I don't think that Chazerim were a big discussion and Ksamim for Chazerim were a big discussion. I think Tosfos is just saying, look, our contemporaries may be raising pigs, they're not splattering blood for whatever the reason is, and if that's the case, then you can't be Tola. And Tosfos is coming out of the Gemara, because the Gemara talks about a place that didn't have Chazerim, but it's like it had Chazerim, maybe because there were Shuk Shel Tabachem all over the place. So I think that the general tenor of the Gemara is that Tliya really is based upon, I'll call statistical probability, with the caveat that we are willing to accept very low probabilities because they may go by Ksamen.
I mean, you could distinguish between the Chazerim and the Macholas and say the Macholas is Rari to return, sort of like how we say by Yom Tov Sheni.
Okay, you would say the same thing about bug bugs. I'm not ruling that out, but I think that Zach is correct. I'm with Zach on this one. I think I'm not telling you. I don't do Mara, so I don't deal with these shaylos. I guess someone could theoretically call me up and say I saw a kesem that was red as red can be, but it was less than the size of a gris. I suppose I could have to address the question then, because I don't do Mara, so I normally address that. I gather that the way Rabbanim deal with the shaylos, then if there's it's tahar. Okay, so again, I'm not going to get bent out of shape, Zach, because some are drabanan. So in the end, we'll say la omer b'ksamim el alakel. But yes, tzarech iyun. Tzarech iyun. Daniel?
But based on your logic that macholot or not,
shchiach
nowadays.
Yes. Oh, in certain contexts, for sure, yeah.
So it shouldn't matter whether or not she's wearing underwear, according to this, at that point.
Correct, but let me tell you what the difference is. The difference is that when it's found on underwear, the probability of a macholas there has to be close to zero, right? We have mosquitoes. We have all sorts of situations where blood could. In other words, when it's on the underwear, there's nothing to be told on.
When she wasn't wearing underwear and it's on whatever color she was wearing, what do you think?
So there's at least a possibility of being tola, right? In other words, when it's on her underwear, I think you can say with virtual 100% certainty that the only way that this is not at least a kesem or whatever is if it's damaka, you know, inside the body, you know, it's inside the makar. Outside of that, I just don't think it's, you know, I think the probability is zero. When it's on her leg and it's less than a gris or on her garment, so there, the probability is small than it used to be, but at least I can start to envision other scenarios. So, okay. All right, so let's turn to the tour. Yes, Chachamim Hizaru B'Divreichem, and I think I was guilty of not being sufficiently careful last night. Yossi?
Could you define
Nizdakra? It's like she did somersaults. It means her legs were vertically, you know, gravitationally speaking, above. I guess she rolled, you know, did somersaults.
And even like one moment.
She's doing I don't know. I'm not sure what, pragmatically speaking. It's, you know, gymnastics is the best thing. You know, I don't know. Is there what's the modern Hebrew word for gymnastics? They should call it his dakrut. Okay, you heard it here first. Right, that's what I envision. In other words.
Did you say anything on that? Or?
I'm sorry?
I
didn't go and check. I doubt it was a sport. Oh, you mean, I don't think they had gymnastics. They had pancration. I don't think they had gymnastics.
Okay.
I know, but it doesn't.
It's
true, but what's your gymnastics?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, fine. All right, I would have liked this better, but fine. I guess I'm not part of the Academia Lashon Hebrew.
We say that even like one high leg kick is enough. To count. No, like is it like a continuous thing? That
I don't know.
That care
I don't think a leg kick is enough. I think you have to do a full flip because one leg up means that the makom ha'erva is still below the belt. You have to do a full flip.
That's a one somersault.
One flip is enough. David.
Well, wouldn't her doing this, wouldn't that leave her exposed if she's not like if they're wearing like a cloak,
my assumption is that this is being either done in private, or it's not, you know, again, let's say she fell on the ground, and somehow her legs wound up above her waist level, right, where she didn't expose herself. I understand. Under normal circumstances, right, gymnasts don't wear skirts. I get that, which is what you're saying. That's correct. So it either had to have been, even aside from the issue of being exposed, I'd imagine it's a tripping hazard or a kind of, you know, you wind up in a very funny position with your garment covering your head.
It's the whole thing.
What?
I was just thinking about it like a couple weeks ago. There was like a 12-year-old girl who was like talking about how she did like gymnastics in her skirts.
That's pretty impressive. Okay.
But there's also like outcry that she shouldn't have to wear a skirt. It's dangerous if she does wear a skirt. It's
probably is dangerous, but okay. If you feel so strongly about it, don't do gymnastics. But okay. Fine. All right, so let's take a look. I think we're up to Oshei in the tour. So I'm going to start from there. So that's the Gemara, very clearly with Tolan Macholas. Ugris Hutesha Adasho Shekozman Sheimbok is Ashir, Anu Tolan Lomar Damkinahu. So the shear is like 9 lentils. The way they describe it is 6 by 6 hairs. The makar for this is not in the Gemara Nida. It's actually in the Mishnayis in Negoim. Yes, Yehuda?
So we answered our question from earlier. The Torah is right.
Here's what's the problem with what you're stating? The problem is that we don't accept that. We probably don't accept that. I haven't seen the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch. What is the shear of gris on basar?
I assume
the Rambam and the Rush, the Beis Yosef said both paskin l'chumra.
I think the Beis Yosef was machria. I think he leaves it as a question, I think.
Okay.
So if we paskin gris on basar, then it's easy.
No, so agreed. So you could argue lo gazru. Agreed. You could say if it's strict zero, but that's not so pashut. Okay,
yeah,
I hear.
Seems to be that.
What's that?
Seems to say that right here.
Again, so the tour never cites the other position, I believe.
But
Right? I think only the Beis Yosef cites that. Okay. Right? I thought the Torah talks about Tziruf, but he assumes you know that the Torah holds you need a shear on the Basar because he only talks about about Tziruf as being a machlokas.
But the Torah, it's an easy question.
Okay, granted. But if you paskin, if you're not machria like the Torah, then the question remains open. But fair, good. Aval pishlo harga kina. And that's the sheet of Rechonim Ben Tignus. Avol mishiyesh bo kizeh asher ein tolim bekina beinim amaruba shalosh adashos al shalosh ohu arach. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the shape of the gris is. All that matters is the square carriage, I guess. All right.
And the Rabban Yehuda's question. I'm pretty sure that the Shulchan. Me and Dan, I picked the Shulchan Aruch, and I think he quotes the Rambam and the Rosh of the Yesh Omer.
As the second one.
Yeah. Okay. Do you need a shear at all?
So, which, by the way, what you should do then. You have to look at it. I'm sure he doesn't elaborate in the Beis Yosef. You now can add this to the examples of where, that's a very small list, where the Beis Yosef violates his rule. He's not passing like the Rambam and the Rosh. And the Rif, I don't think, is quoted as saying anything, so it's a 2 against 0, and yet he passes the other way.
No,
now,
the Yesh Omer is that your Mitzatari Fana Chalukah. Never mind, I'm remembering.
No. So again,
he doesn't quote the...
Yeah, I have not gone through the Shulchan Aruch. We'll get with that. But if he doesn't passing that like the Rambam and the Rosh, it's interesting. It's not unheard of. The Darkei Moshe, his introduction, points out that it's either introduction or someone who sits points out that the Mechaber violated his rule. The Beis Yosef violated his rule. But okay. Yehuda, your question or no? Okay. V'kasev Ramban, im nizdam nala gris yoser agadol mizashir misharimbo v'tolon oso bekina at sheyebo kishir gris hagadol. The Ramban is quoting the Ravid and the Balei HaNefesh. And the basis for this is really just a svara. And the claim is that the Gemara says kigrisha pool, and it doesn't say what kind of pool. Okay. The Torah continues. Im harga pishpesh ohe richa recho tolim boat keturmus. Go ahead.
Of all of the shirin that we deal with have an objective measurement. You would think that this one would be the most relevant. Like we have you know excised olives, but we don't if we're trying to figure out how much blood is coming out of a mosquito, right? That would one would think that the most logical way to go about doing that would be by setting an objective measurement, as opposed to like measuring against the average size of a local bee.
But again, most of the shirim are, you think they're all agricultural? It's not a surprise.
I know they're all agricultural.
Okay.
Weren't they also all formalized afterward? Meaning, their niches being agricultural, they also were used as if they were a power system. Weren't they?
What do you mean?
Meaning, a lot of the, again, like, again, I'm not sure how it was done in the,
And you're saying that we understand Zayas not to be our local Zayas, but what a Zayas typically was.
Correct.
Yeah, I think that's correct. But we're always mako by ksamim. This is probably a function of the fact that lo amr b'ksamim el hak. I think it probably is. The Ramban is explicit about that.
I mean, it's also this wouldn't apply for gris yosef, but for gris katan, only gris gadol.
Well, the point is yes. The answer is it's not that you have to take a gris and use it, but what is the shear of a gris? So if you can, the more the merrier, basically. The bigger the merrier.
Only in one direction.
Correct. Because tolam b'ksamim el hakim. Yehuda.
Sounds similar to say we talk about colors. At least how the Rambam described it, you're supposed to actually go out and look at what color the saffron is.
Check summon now. I think they take something. They take a dime or some say a dime, some say a penny, and they use some of those. They don't just look and say, "I think that isn't." They actually do measure it.
No, more than that, I'm saying it's not that. It's that the color, even for colors, it almost seems to depend on the actual saffron. Go out and pull up a saffron.
I don't think so.
Well, you have stories in the crowd of people doing that, and the Rambam seems to say you should do that.
You think you can't
all the colors by memory, and they just remember the colors?
I think so. I don't see where you see that in the Gemara.
When you talk about the Chassidim would use dirt that was not mixed with water.
Right, in some cases they did. Right, I guess you by Adam you couldn't do it, and they didn't do it. So that's the one case they do it. Maybe Adam is the one, right?
Well, even the Adam, they talk about Adam as non-kihai.
What's that?
They talk about Adam as non-kihai. That's different. It's not.
That's just to know in the first place what it is. That you don't get. You get the sense, right? I don't get the sense that there is one Gemara. It's true like that, but I don't get the sense on the whole. That was being done, but maybe it was. I mean, today certainly they look at it and just It's again, it's a different kind of game. They say, is it red or is it not red?
Is it
right.
Colorblind?
What?
Is it colorblind?
No. I mean, I can't tell you. Nobody does. Whenever I have seen people who do maras, they take it out into appropriate light, they take it in the sunlight, and they look at it. They don't compare it against the color. Now, granted, it may be different when you're just deciding whether it's a yes or no question, is there red in it as opposed to a shade of red, but okay. But I think by size, you typically, you know, I mean, I suspect that if it's so small that the ROAD looks at it and says, of course, this isn't that size, they might not bother, but I think that people will.
Why don't we take out beans
today? What?
Why don't we go into our cabinet and take out a bean?
Because it's easier to use a dime or a penny. It doesn't shrink, and it doesn't, and you already get the size you want. You never know the bean you're pulling.
But my point is, maybe it's us who use a dime or a penny. Maybe you have to use the biggest bean. Nah.
Zach?
When did we start using dimes and pennies?
Well, it's just there's people sort of measured. It's the reason why.
Who said that that's exactly what the grist shall pull it? I mean, what I'm saying is that Rambani is that the grist can be.
So the answer is, let me give you a way of thinking about it. You have to look carefully at your hand. Maybe it's permissible under these circumstances to shave the hair, a little hair on your arm. Certainly shaving a spot, it's certainly not begadisha. And you could look at sort of six follicles by six follicles. Okay? There's shesh saros by shesh saros, and you'll see. I mean, I tried looking at once, and I sort of got a gauge, and it did seem to sort of make sense that would be about the size of a dime or a penny. So the reason you use a dime or a penny is because it's matzui, it's readily handy. I haven't asked, but the people who do maris, and there are several of the rabbeim here who do it, I wonder if they sort of carry around specifically, you know, maybe not with the rest of their change, but always carry around a penny. I'm serious, a penny or a dime, just because they may need it. Okay. Anyway, if you do shimush and maros, not with me obviously, so then you will deal with that. Okay. Then the Torah continues. Harga pishpesh ozayin o ibicha recho tolan boat kitormas avalo hargato avalohi ibicha recho ein tolambo v'chein hargato umotza yosem icha tormas ein tolambo. Right. This follows simple rules straight out of the Gemara. We paskin that by pishpesh, in order to be tola, she has to either smell it or know that she killed it. One of those two. Otherwise, you cannot be tola. He continues. Im ein bekesem b'makom echad gigris, avo po sheyush tipim harbe smuchim zelazeh, ad shem nitzarfeim yesh bem yosem yigris tahora. So that's what the Gemara said, that explicitly there was a brisa, kesem aruch mitzarif tipin ein mitzarfin, and the big discussion that we shown them is, as the Torah is about to say, is where is that kesem? So he continues. Sh'anu tolun kol tipa v'tipa b'china ad shehebo k'gris v'od b'malkom echad. Bametzvam amurim k'sha'atipin al chaluka. Avom heim al besara mitztarfin l'chigris. Afilu ein atipin omdem b'seder ze etzel ze, ela omdem b'shinui o asuyim shuros o omdem k'chatsuva o k'igol o sh'orkan l'rochav ayerach l'chol inyin t'mea shekol shenimsa al besara anu tolun l'hachbir. Few points are worth mentioning here. Number one, the notion that Yamachmir, when it's Nimseis al-Basara, there is one Shita in the Rishonim, I think it was the Ravid. No, that's not the Ravid. There's one Shita, maybe it was the Rashba himself, was Mashma, that you don't, no, it's, I don't know who it is, that even al-Basara, the Tipin are not Mitztarfin. Maybe the Rashba does mention that. The Rashba, that is the Shita, I think the Rashba of Rabbo. So let me frame it this way. There are three Shitos. Shita number one says that the Basar is treated the same way as Beged here, and the Tipin are not Mitztarfin. The second Shita is that Basar is different than Beged, in that Basar requires gris, but even if it's separate tipin, we are machmir. We're not tola each one on a kina, whereas a beged, we would be tola each one on a kina. And the third shita is, there's no need for tziruf by kesem alabasar, because kesem alabasar doesn't require shir. The basis for the latter two shitas, where we're more machmir on the basar than we are on the beged, is the brisa that we looked at a long time ago on the opening amud of the perek haroah, which said that safek a kesem on the beged is tahar, safek on the basar is tameh. And the question is how to understand that particular brisa, and the Beis Yosef, the Rashba, discusses this at great length. Okay. Just one. Okay, so just a comment, by the way, just in terms of the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch. The Mechaber quotes as the primary Deya, the Rashba, and his Rebbe, and then, only then he quotes a Yesh Omrim, and that is that there's no difference between Basar and Beget, that they're not Mitztarif. And then he quotes a Shita that says that there is no, that Tziruf, you don't, that is that Tipin are Mitztarif on the Basar, even though it's not Mitztarif on the Beget. He does not quote the Rambam or the Rosh Shita that you don't need a Shear on the Basar. So you can put this on that list, which is probably a relatively short list of situations where the Beis Yosef doesn't paskin like the Rambam and the Rosh. But unless, is there somewhere, oh, earlier he says it, one second. He quotes it in earlier, so that's why, as the Yesh Omrim. But it's interesting that in Sif Ches, he's ignoring the second Yesh Omrim, because you wouldn't be having that discussion without qualifying it. Yehuda?
Could be that he counts the riff against, because if maybe the riff doesn't believe in Kisamim at all, so he's always following the Kishita to make out.
Very, very clever, but it's still a 2-on-1.
Yeah, it's still.
I got it. But, you know, he never sort of makes that claim. He never makes that claim, so I don't know. I suspect that methodologically you wouldn't count the riff as a shita there,
okay.
Because in other words, the riff is totally. If that's what the riff meant, he's totally michutz lemachane.
Still, he'd agree that you should be make out of all the situations.
Yeah. In other words, I think in this case he's not arguing on the tom. He would. In other words, what would the riff hold by taros? And that's what we would hold. By Isha Labaila. Is that actually a question?
Yeah, this whole issue is of Mitztarfin on the Basar, that comes from the Gemara where Yirmiya asks the question about the different shapes on the leg, right?
Yirmiya, that's correct. So let me talk about that for a moment. The crucial Shaila there is what was Rav Yirmiya's question when he asked all about these tipin mahu. And the Gemara was docha. It was docha, and it said it's not metame. But a lot of the Rishonim, including the Rashba, suggest it was docha, but it wasn't a real dechia. In other words, really, it could be that it's tame. But the question is, what was the Gemara shaila? Was the shaila about siruf? In which case, you see that you definitely need a shear on the basar, and then, but if you say that the Gemara was being docha, it was only a dechusa, then you would say that no tziruf is required, that you can be mitzarif tipin on the basar. But there is another way of reading that Gemara which allows you now to adopt two other extreme positions. And that is that the Gemara Shaila was not all about shear. Either the tipos were larger than the gris va'od, and it wasn't the question of tziruf, or the tipin were really small, but you don't need tziruf because you don't need a shear on the basar. But what was the Gemara Shaila? The Gemara Shaila was, is the tzura of these drops, the way they came out, prove that they didn't come from the makar? Because had they come from the makar, they should have been in a regular straight line, the tipin. And since they're not, is that a halchacha that they didn't come from the makar? In which case, we don't care what the shear is. It's irrelevant because you know the dam didn't come from the makar. So therefore, you could either hold like the Rashban is Rebbe and say, look, of course there's no tziruf on the basar, and you need a shear grist. But the Gemara Shaila was a case where you had tipos of a grist va'od. But the Gemara Shaila was, there's the tzura mochiach that they didn't come from the makar. The shear is irrelevant. Mitzad, because why? Because there is a shear. It's just large enough for a kesem. We're trying to figure out, did it come from the makar? And if you hold like the Rambam and the Rosh, so once again, the Gemara Shaila is not about siruf. Why? Because you don't need siruf. The ksamim could have been less than a gris, it could have been more than a gris, but the bottom line is, they're tameh anyway based upon the shear. The only shaila is did it come from the makar. Okay, so that, the crucial first point in this, in fleshing out the shita of Rishonim here, is understanding what the Gemara's question was. Was it about shirim and tziruf, or was it about tsura? If it's about shirim and tziruf, it's absolutely clear that you need a shear on the basar, and the only shaila is what's the maskan of the Gemara? Is there tziruf? Is there no tziruf? But if you believe that the shaila, and therefore you certainly reject the Rambam and the Rosh, and the only shaila is, do you hold like the Rashba? Which day in the Rashba do you hold like? But if you believe that Gemara's question had nothing to do with shir, and there might have even been a gris va'od in each of the tipos, the only shy of the Gemara is the tzura mochiach anything about the source of the blood. So then you could either hold that there is no tzira from the basar, you require shir and there's no tzira from the basar, just like there's no tzira from the beged, or you could hold that you don't even need a shir on the basar. You could go either way once you pick that interpretation of the Gemara. Okay. Yud. Kesem shenim sal davar shenim makabel tuma lo gosru alav. Ketzad, batka kaka olam, o kol davar shenim makabel tuma, v'yashva alav, v'matza bo kesem tahora. V'chesem anim tzal beget tzavua, pligi ba tanakama metame, for Rabbi Yonasa metar, upasak ramban ki tanakama, b'far ramam ki Rabbi Yonasa, v'chasav adoni yarash zal, u'b'ksamim shom alohakel, and certainly we would be makel since the ramam, it's the ramam the rush against the ramban. I'm not familiar with what you quoted earlier, Judah, and maybe we'll come back to it and read the Shulchan Aruch, but I would assume that the question, I would have two comments about the polyester question. I haven't looked into this, and I wasn't familiar with this. Is, firstly, is that really true, that when it's 100% polyester, they make some cotton? And number two, the second question, which, again, I'm not in the Inyan, is, does it matter? Because often, usually when we determine things, we follow a rove. And they, for example, in Kilayim, when you have to decide whether something is tzemer, and you have a mixture of tzemer Geffen or Tzemer Gmalim and Tzemer Rechelim, so if I'm not mistaken, to determine whether it's Tzemer or not, we look at the majority and when there's an Harobes and one is Mevatel the other. I'm pretty sure we talk about it in the context of Kilayim and Tzitzis as well. So even if you had a few strands of cotton in the polyester, firstly, you don't even know that the garment is still polyester. It still shouldn't be Mekabel Tumah because the Ruba is polyester. But again, I haven't... I have to look and see exactly what he says and what the concern is. But in theory, it's a Matthias question. Okay. Right. I think we assume probably that regular toilet paper is also not Makabal Tuma. Yeah, that's a general assumption, which is why, going back to a question that's worth repeating, we tell women not to wipe themselves, to wait a short amount of time. The whole purpose of that is to make sure that what winds up on the toilet paper is only a kesem, not a re'iyah, on the assumption that the toilet paper is not makabel tumah, so if it's not a re'iyah, you don't have kesem. Zach?
Not being kind of a crazy loophole, why is that not a bedika? Like, what's the difference?
Oh, because wiping, external wiping, we usually assume is not a bedika. Bedika means... And we can talk about how far in it has to be, but just what would normally be external wiping, you know, that's not...
that's the issue there is a hard... Because
Hargasha, right, that's the issue. Right. In other words, if she waits, and she hasn't found any bleeding yet, in other words, there's no blood obvious, and then she's waited, now at this point, if she wipes herself and finds some blood on the toilet paper... There's no Hargasha, therefore it's only a kesem. But that only works if you assume the toilet paper is not Makabel Tumah. Right, the toilet paper is Makabel Tumah. What?
That just makes it not a kesem.
Correct. But once it becomes a kesem, you're stuck. Right, the whole point is we're trying...
So if you wait, then it's not a kesem. It's not even a kesem.
Correct. A kesem on something... If you don't wait, it's a re'iyah. And it doesn't... By re'iyah, it doesn't matter whether... By re'iyah, it makes no difference whether it's colored or Makabel Tumah. Right, that's a special kula by kesem. We want to turn it into a kesem, which we can then ignore. Okay. Fine. The tour continues. Lo b'chol ha'makoma she'imatzah shem kesem tameh l'dafka b'malkom she'efshah shabam en ha'makar. This is the Mishnah. Keitza, nimtza l'akeva tameh she'menagabo samalkom yishivasa. It's interesting. The Gemara, I think, never discussed this, but he assumes that on the heel, it could actually have touched if she's sort of sitting, you know, not Indian style, but, you know, with her legs sort of pulled in between, pulled up next to her. Whereas a toe would be very hard to be touching, which is why the Gemara has to say, the way the Rashi understands the Gemara, that maybe as she was walking, it dripped down. Yes, sir?
So it sounds like he's not just saying that it's possible, but it's like it's only, we're only worried Shema Nagaro Osamako, Nishivasa.
Right, as opposed to what?
Okay, but by the Maskam of the Gemara, when she's walking and it drips on her toe, the same, her heel is in virtually the same position.
Correct. It could also, that's another way to get to the heel. I see. In other words, I got it. Okay, I hear what you're saying. The chayne minzal kol orach shoka uparsosea mi befne behena makoma sanedbako zo bezo beishetamo vitidabek regel beregel v'shok b'shok. He adopts the Rambam's reading of makom hadavek. He has a whole discussion of Rashi and the Aruch and the difficulties, and he thought the simplest reading, which actually is the most logical reading, is that the place in which is considered mibifnim, and the Gemara used the makam achebek, is the parts where if you put your legs together, the parts that would be covered up. And then you only have to explain, you know, what does it mean when the Gemara asks chevek atzmo, what does that mean? If after all, the chevek atzmo is the part of the flesh that's touching. So I think he suggests it means sort of right along the edges, which is not actually touching. That's called the chevek atzmo, and the part that's called punim is actually the parts that are actually touched and covered over. Alex?
This situation, for instance, when it's honored here, is a shema.
Right.
So why are we being mad?
Because you have to have somebody else to be toled on. In other words, to be. In other words, understand. If it's on somewhere on her legs,
how big is this?
The kesem.
Yeah.
It's whatever the rule of basar is, which is a machlokas harishon.
So it goes without saying that but for all the opinions, if it would be under that shear, it's not something we're being told. We're not worried about this.
Well, the Rambam doesn't believe there's a shear, so by definition, any amount is tummy.
Right. Okay. Well, let me ask the question a different way. Even let's say that it's above the shear, according to those who say you need a shear.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's one side to say that it wasn't something else. On the other hand, it's unlikely that if it's from her makor, it would have landed there.
Why?
It's possible.
Well, and again, you cannot be tola if you don't. It's because it's possible, and you have nothing else to be tola on.
But the very fact that if it's from her makor, let's say we did a statistical analysis, and it's like, 30% possible that it went there. So I understand.
But what's the other? Where's the other possibility?
I understand that.
Yes, you can't. No. You cannot talk in those terms. That's a false use of statistics. You cannot say when I find the don there, well, there was only a 30% chance of it coming from the makor. Therefore, I should assume it's not come from the makor, because I think that it's a little bit analogous to Albert Einstein asking students at Princeton, given all the following factors, what's the probability I should be standing here in front of you? And the answer, and they gave all sorts of calculations, that you're wrong because it's 100% because I'm here. It's a fact already. So the only thing you can talk about is where is it more likely to have come from? It may be unlikely that a woman will drip blood from the makor down to those particular spots. But if you don't have a more likely source for the blood, it's not 30% of those come in a makor, but rather of those times that blood is found there, and what is the probability it came from the makor versus somewhere else? And there, the probability from the makor, if you have no else to be told, is very high. Lightning sometimes strikes, right? If you come after a lightning strike, well, the odds that lightning should strike is 100%. Now, the only thing you have to determine is, well, was this really caused by lightning or was somebody doing something else? Well, the answer is, what's the probability of somebody doing something else? What's the probability of there being lightning? That's what you have to ask here. So even if it's unlikely that dam generally, when a woman gets her period, is likely to wind up there, if blood is there, it's there already. Now you have to say, where is the greatest probability it came from? And that is not at all determined by what's the likelihood directly, by what's the likelihood of the makor dripping there.
Let's say it was on the underside of her foot. Now it's very unlikely that she sat on the underside of her foot.
Well, I think the underside of her foot, you wouldn't say, because that would be a place, that's not a place where they talk about being tummy.
Granted, but
so I would just say that there's a point at which we assume that we may not know where the blood came from, but it's so unlikely that it came from the makor that at that point it's just as likely it came from some unknown source.
But we don't have any reasons. We don't know any others.
Except for when it's found on the outside of the leg, it's almost impossible it came from the makor, and we're not machzikin tamim makom lemakom. That's sort of a basic klal. So at that point, the probability of winding up there from the makor. So you started by asking the question, what's the probability that the makor actually drips on that spot? But if the makor dripped, there's a good probability that it would get on that spot. But if it's in a place where it really couldn't come from the makor, it's really virtually impossible, then even though we don't know what the other possibilities are, the other possibilities loom much larger.
So really the percentages we have to be dealing with are like zero, practically speaking.
Yes.
Is it much more a question of, it's not a question of probability.
In order to invent a clear that we don't know about.
Right.
Oops, sorry, yeah?
It's much more a question of possibility or impossibility. It's impossible to have gotten onto the small of your back. Even
well, it's not back. Impossible, except because we say machzik and tamim makom lemakom. Right? That's
it's
more.
To go directly.
Correct.
But since it is possible, so I think to Alex that it's not even whether or not there's, even if it's not a greater probability, even if let's say our model is that when you go through the shuk shel tabachim, there's a 10% chance that blood will hit you, and there's a 25% chance that it'll hit you. if there's even the small, if there's a possibility of anything else that we know of. Like,
well, is it, no, it has to be a definitive possibility.
Yeah, definitive possibility.
A known possibility, not an abstract one.
Even if it's smaller than...
Might be, yeah.
Right, but obviously the parameters are not so clear set, because we do say if she has a suffix when she went through
She has to know that she potentially came in contact with the blood source. Suffik avra is not a suffik. Suffik naga, suffik nitsa is a suffik. Right? It's not just a statistical question. I believe it's a question of, I'll call ikva yisura, ikva tuma. You hear that?
But you were saying just now that there is a point at which we say an unknown source is where it came from. Now, let's take the most extreme possible case. You find blood on her countertop. You don't assume that she somehow bled on the countertop, assuming she never sat there.
Correct.
So there is a point which we assume it comes from some unknown source, even if we can't play.
Correct. That's how I respond to that. So
why is this fundamentally different? Is it not fundamentally different? It's just a sliding scale, and this happens to fall on one side of the scale, and that happens to fall on the other side? Or is there some fundamental difference between finding blood on the countertop and finding blood...
Well, the basic quotes that when it's on your skin and your skin only, you have a strong chazaka.
There is clearly an assessment of probabilities. I don't know that the probability coming from outside source has to outweigh the probability that it came in hamak, or strictly speaking. But there is a point at which we say that, I'll call it the highly unlikely. Shall we call it that? Highly unlikely that dam would be found on her basar and not on the chalak. Not impossible, but highly unlikely.
Well, is it like a Bayesian calculation? We say that given that we found blood here, what's the probability?
That's what I said to Alex. That's my point. I mean, we're starting with the assumption there is blood there. Now we have to trace it. Okay. You're a tough crowd. All right. So, v'cheinim nimsa... And who made that ha'ara about how the Torah starts? Alex? Who said it? Because it's a very good ha'ara. Why does the Torah... And as the Gemara says, Bishlama Akeva was no gospel samakam. But Godla how? And the Gemara then gives the other teretz. So, in other words, the part of the question is that, of course, it can drip on our Akeva as well. But sitting creates an even greater possibility. What do goats do exactly?
So goats kick their hind heels.
Oh, they kick their hind legs out.
That's what I assumed it was.
Oh, okay. Does anybody here know anything about goats?
Where does goats go? I feel like, I don't know, Camp Stone has goats.
What's that? The goats kick their hind legs up and raising their hind legs and pushing their sort of rump a little off the ground?
Yes.
They do. Why do they do that? For exercise?
That's how horses kick, I know that.
What's that?
They also eat, like, the placenta
after
other weird things.
Okay, fine. So anyway... That's the kusha point. So the first day that the Torah quotes is that if it's found on the basar. And it's going to become clear later, certainly the Rashba's position, but I think it's also the way Beis Yosef understands the Torah is agreeing with the Rashba, it means on her basar only, not on the basar and the beged. If it's on the basar and the beged, then you can be told that by Avra Shushuk Shul Tabachim. So this shita is that you're not told in the Hakel what's on the basar. But then there is another shita. The other shita, which I thought it was the Ravid. Is that right or wrong? I'm not sure. That's the Ravid.
That's Ravid, yeah.
Yes, the Ravid has to have a very difficult reading. This goes back to the sugya on, I think it's Nun Zayin Amid Beis. That Brisa that said Safek al Basara Tame, Safek al Bigodeh al Bigda is Tahar, and the Gemara gave sort of two Ibayasemas on how to read the Brisa, and the Ravid seems to be assuming that the second Ibayasema rejects the first one, whereas most of the Rishonim say that both answers actually work. In other words, it's not. In fact, some don't even have the girsa. I think the Beis Yosef points out some may not even have the girsa of the Ibrahisema. We may understand that there's simply two things that there actually is no contradiction in between.
Is there a general consistent methodology for how to interpret an Ibrahisema?
Well, it kind of depends. The answer is no. Very often, typically it means it's not working with the first Teretz. But in this particular case, what it's doing is making a Ukimta either in the Reisha or a Ukimta in the Seifa. And by doing so, though, you could really apply it sort of across the board. So most Rishonim assume that both answers to the Gemara stand, and therefore one more Machmir by Safek al-Basara, which is the first Teretz. But the Ravid seems to be assuming the second Teretz is rejecting the first Teretz. And there's no difference then between Nimseis al-Basara and Nimseis in principle. You know, I'll call it meta-halachically. In other words, as a general category. Mitzias reasons, there may be a reason to distinguish between the two. But as a matter of principle, we generally don't distinguish. So that is the Ravid sheet, which is Ve'yishom Shafil Nimse Begufa Talina Lahakel in Avra B'shuk Shal Tabacha Bonisaska B'ksamen V'rishon Ikar. Now, as I mentioned already, the Rashba assumes that this means Nimseis al-Basara l'chud, not Nimseis al-Basara v'chaluka. Well, the difference is that when it's the reason why we're more machmir, Nimseis al-Basara, and the Torah is about to explain the exception, is because if it came a alma, even though over b'shuk shel tabachan, why is it on the basar and not on the beged? So now he says, which I would define as external sources of blood. That's the principle. We assume that in order to be tole, bein l'chumra, bein l'kula, we assume that there has to be a direct method, path for the blood to get from its source to the place that you found it without an intermediary of a hand moving it. But the part he says earlier, that by Mantra Mamurim, is that if the source of the blood is underneath the beged, where there's a very good reason why it might have wound up on the basar and not on the beged, so then you can be tola, even on the basar. In other words, it's not a meta halacha category that we're more machmir by basar than we are by beged. It's a metzias issue. David, your question? I'm sorry. There was a hand up there. Okay. Yossi, I'm sorry.
What's the Gemara again that you were...
It's the Braisa on Nun Zayin Amabes. The beginning, I think it's Nun Zayin Amabes is the first Amun in the parak. It's the Braisa when the Gemara quotes the Safek al-Basara Kesem, which is Safek al-Basara is Tame, and al-Bigda is Tahar.
How to read that?
And the Gemara is bothered by whatever it's bothered by, and it probably says one teretz, and then he buys a different teretz, and so on. Right? In other words, the question was, if it's lamala minha chagora, it should be tar no matter what. And if it's lamata, it should be tamit. And so that's when the Gemara introduces either I think it was one teretz by lamata, and the other by lamala, and nizdakra. Right? By nizdakra, the Gemara says lamala, if it's on the basar, then it's tamay, on the beged, it's tahar. Okay. Yud base. Nimsa kesem achaluka lamatem and achagar imlo over b'shuk shel tabachem tmeya afila nimsa letzad chutz over b'shuk shel tabachem tahora afila nimsa letzad pnim. There's the rule here. Letzad pnim doesn't mean on the basar. It means if she has multiple skirts, there's multiple layers to the skirt. We're not. It is possible sometimes for one or more layers to be lifted up. Bein b'chutz bein b'pnim. With the one caveat, the assumption is what does not happen. All the layers do not get lifted at the same time. Because if they did, then you could... Well, the reason we assume that is because she doesn't want to be exposed. If we did assume that that would happen, so then, even if it was only found on the basar, you should be able to be tola.
We say that one layer may live and she's wearing two. We don't say that one layer may come up and she's wearing one. Right?
I'm sorry?
She's wearing multiple layers.
So correct, but we don't assume...
We can assume that maybe one or two came up.
But not all at the same time.
But not all at the same time. But if she's only wearing one layer...
Then we assume that she's careful. She doesn't allow, you know, the garment to rise up.
Oh, the idea is that it's about what she'd be, like, careful about.
She's going to be careful because if she doesn't want to be exposed. You hear that?
Is that true?
What?
That you would never expose your leg if you're wearing a long skirt if it's a windy day?
The assumption seems to be here is that, again, I don't know what the Matsya they were working with, but that three layers are not all going to be exposed. Multiple layers are not all going to be exposed.
Right, but one layer, but we also, even one layer we assume can't be exposed. You're wearing a skirt, let's say, and you're not wearing
So maybe you don't wear, so again, I'm gonna play the game here with you and say that women didn't wear one layer on windy days. This is the Matsyas that we've shown him describe. You can disagree with their assessment of Matsyas, but that's what they're describing. The one time a woman would lift up her layer, all of her layers, is when she had to cross through water. That's why over achar isha b'mayim in lo chelik lolam haba. Right? That's why, because that's what would happen, and that's why you're not allowed to be mistakel benashim. You're not allowed to you're not allowed to be seeing the women b'shash ondo salakfisa. Why? Because they used to walk into the river to launder the clothing, and they would lift their garments up and bend down in order to wash the clothing. And they were lifting their garments up so their garments didn't get wet. So essentially, a situation where they would be more exposed, and therefore it's usher to be there. Doesn't mean it's usher to be in the laundromat where a woman is sticking clothing into the maytag washer. Believe it or not, I once had a question that came my way in this fashion, okay, where I had to put out a fire.
Do people do that?
Put clothing in the Maytag washer?
No,
a Rebbe told his students that, and I received a call from that they can't be there when women are doing laundry, and I received a call from, an administrator asking me my opinion, and I explained the reason why it's us at B'Shem Shad Kvisa is because they were exposed to themselves. They don't do that by a Maytag washer. It's not called a Kvisa. It's not the same thing. Okay. So anyway, yes, David?
I get it. Why are we saying that? Oh, we're not gonna wear that. All the layers are gonna come up. Can we just say that if there's blood on her buser, then we're being mocked by buser versus if it's on?
But that's what I'm telling you. That you can see from the discussion, just from the tours, what he says by makkah, that's not true. It's not a meta halacha category of buser versus begadim. It's fundamentally metzias oriented.
Yeah.
And again, I would question whether the Rambam and Rush, excuse me, who say that the shear of a kesem on the basar is a kol shehu, I wonder whether they're also agreeing with that prompt, but even that could probably work with it. But again, I understand. One looks at the brayse and the initial response is, basar is a different geder than beged. But I think when you look, as it's discussed case after case, it's really the linear is a mitzias, primarily is a mitzias question. Yes?
So would you consider underwear to fall into this category?
Well, again, I think once it's on the underwear, it's almost virtually, there's no suffix anymore where it came from. Right, there's essentially no suffix.
If you have a bra on your outer skirt and on your underwear.
So I think that we would.
On the same spot. In such a way that it's pretty obvious the blood soaks through from the outside.
So that's a different story.
That's
a highly unusual case, because if it came through on the skirt on the outside, it's not so likely it would be in the same place that it would be if it came from her body. It's a different place on the underground.
I understand.
But in theory, yes. In theory, my reservation, I would completely withdraw my reservations once you have blood on the outer garment too. Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, you'd have to have a tliya. That's the general rule, but absolutely I would agree with you. Okay. Dimnimsa al Bisara Bachaluka Kosav Haramban Shetola Bachomashi Shlitlos Kagon Shinis Aska Biksam over Bashuk Shah Tabachim Tolim, Utahor Bain Shinim Salamata Meahagar or Shinisnakur and Salamala Meahagar. But low over Bashuk Shah Tabachim, Lonis Aska, but some of Nim Salamata Meahagar, or the Malam men of his Dakwa Tamea. Okay, so this is straightforward. This is the case of Basar and Chaluka, and here we are principal Tola Lahakel if there's what to be Tola on. The language of the Ramban, if you see the full language, is slightly difficult. It needs a little clarification. You can read the Beis Yosef, but I think it's not too difficult to read. He raises two possibilities on how to read the Ramban, which both come out to mean the same thing, although he prefers one option. Just as a note, someone had asked me about this. I am under the impression, one of the things that you know is that the Tor, as the Beis Yosef repeatedly notes, did not have the Torah Sabayis HaOroch. He only had the Torah Sabayis HaKatzar, which is important because sometimes to fully flesh out what the Rashba held, you have to see the longer version. So the Beis Yosef makes this comment a number of times. But one of the important questions which we raised is, what did the Beis Yosef have in front of him? And I am under the impression, but I could be wrong, the Beis Yosef may not have had the Chidush HaRamban, and I'm not even sure he had the Chidush HaRashba on Shas, I'm not sure, maybe. But one of the reasons I say that is because how was he always quoting the Ramban much of the time?
From the
Magen Mishnah. Yeah, and I'm wondering about that, whether or not the Beis Yosef didn't. I mean, it would surprise me. The Tor did not have the Magen Mishnah. Magen Mishnah was a Chavrus and a contemporary of the Ran. so he's later. But I think that the I get the impression
the
Torah had the Ramban, but the Beis Yosef seems not to. And I could be wrong. He might have it, but I don't know why. He seems to always be cited from the Magen Mishnah. Yes.
Rabbi Kapper noted that in the sugya of women being a woman doing tefillah in front of Beis Yosef, that sugya that is also seems clear that the Beis Yosef didn't have the Ramban.
Right. So that again, anecdotally, that happens to fit. So he's always relying upon secondhand. Was that an argument from silence, or that he quotes the Ramban through the Magen Mishnah?
He's quoting the Ramban.
What's that?
Misunderstand.
Uh huh. Okay. Right. So it does. He's quoting the Ramban he's getting the Ramban from another source, which may not accurately reflect the Ramban's intent. So it certainly fits with anecdotally just what I've been thinking about as I read through the Siman, how frequently he's quoting the Magen Mishnah to get the Ramban. Okay. Fine. Yud Gimel. Im nimsa al beis yad shel chaluka mamakom shenimsa ba hadam beis yad magi ad beis haturfa. Then tmei afilum eni yachol agi Hashem elan kin tishcha harbe v'menu yacholi Hashem kal Torah. So if it's on the sleeve, so this is straight really from the right. This is from the Mishnah that if it's on the sleeve, it depends whether or not the sleeve could reach the makam erva. So the truth is, this part, if I'm standing up, this part probably just about reaches without doing anything. This part will not reach unless I bend over, but that also could be. But this part probably cannot get it on it because it simply cannot bend in the same way. Okay. Your dal, yes, Alex.
This part of the body, it seems to me, is the part of the body that you're less likely to notice if something did happen.
I know, but the point is that it's virtually not impossible. It's very highly, highly unlikely that if it's found on the shoulder here, that it came in a marker.
My thing doesn't make sense. You don't even have to get into that analysis because it for sure didn't come from the marker.
Right, that's correct. When it's not about whether I know it got there or not. That would be more relevant to later in the siman about a chaluk sheino baduk and when did the kesem get there and would you likely see it and so on. But no, to here it's just a question of where did it come from. Yudalit. Hoise pashtatu umiskase bo balayla b'chol makom shimatze bo tamim eishu chozev eilach ve'eilach v'cheina denimintze b'mafor shemachase bo rosha. Fine. If you take the beged off at night and you either wrap yourself in it, it's a blanket now, rather than wearing his clothing, so you understand blankets do move around. Right. Some people are neat sleepers and some people are sloppy sleepers. I'm not sure there's any connection between how they sleep and how they lead the rest of their lives, but that's the mitzvah. You know, if you've ever slept with a blanket that is not tucked in, that when you wake up in the morning, it is not at all in any kind of order. What? Well, no. If you sleep with a top sheet that's tucked in, yes. It effectively means that you're more likely. I'm speaking to my experience now, you know, if this is kol maserav. But yes, I generally find that it tends, because of the top sheet, if it's tucked in, then the blanket tends to be much more orderly. It doesn't move around as much. And the top sheet is easy to straighten out as well until it gets pulled out.
It's
yes.
More rather we should see the top sheet.
What's that? You know, I would tell you say that as a joke, but I've actually said that in the past when you get to the rush at the end of the siman. The rush talks about that if it's found, in other words, he talks about the sudden, and the sudden will be all over the place, but the rush says that's only the sudden shomala, but I think he says the sudden shomata, so it doesn't move from its place. So you see that the rush held, you're supposed to have a bottom sheet and a top sheet. Okay. All right. Anyway, the answer is you do whatever your mother or your wife tells you to do in this matter, okay?
I mean, like,
that's all.
Sheet as opposed to the floor.
Directly on the surface of the stone bed or whatever bed the bed was made out of.
Right.
Directly on the mattress. Okay. Their beds might not.
What's it?
So leave me alone. Just leave me alone. Tezayin, v'chein adin l'inyan tara, shim yesh l'maka b'tzavara, v'nimsa ha'kesek b'cholok, afil l'matam n'chag, or she'efshu l'igo shem e'maka, im pashtatu m'skasa b'tola b'mrakosa, shani ome n'sapek b'alo sham. It probably shouldn't be b'tzavara, but it should be, the basis is not b'ksefa. The ksefa is the place you're normally not tola, but l'mata because it can't get there, but it doesn't matter. The din is obvious. In other words, if it's in a place that normally couldn't rip down, in other words, let's say it's on the back of the shoulder, and it normally couldn't rip down to the front of the chaluk, but you sleep with the chaluk as a blanket, so obviously it can get all over the chaluk from the shoulder. Yudzayin, matzah kesem l'mala mechag, or b'kesem l'matim menu. So this was the Gemara of, on the top of, I think, was it Nun Chesem and Aleph? Not Nun Tesem and Aleph. What was the language of the Gemara? It was in the discussion of Gris Va'od, whether or not a Gris Va'od is Mekabel, whether it's Gris or Gris Va'od.
So the bottom of the number bed is
during testament alis. How you tipe dama lamata vatipe dama lamala. Told about Elyon at Kegrisa, Rashi there understood big and small. I don't even think the Beis Yosef quotes Rashi. The Torah doesn't. Most of the Rishonim understood is if you find a stain on top and a stain on the bottom, and the stain on the top is big enough, it's more than a grisva oat, so it couldn't have come from a kina, since you know external blood got on top. You can be told at the bottom on that very same source. So that's what he says. Matza kesem lamala meachagor bekesem lamata mimenav yodashel and isdakra tahora shani omer kemoshe Elyon ba me'alma kach ba tachton ba metzvah mamurim kishiyesh be Elyon kegrisva oat, because the o. What is the o here? Oh, mi kegrisva od olamala. Kegrisva od or bigger. Why? Shavadai ba me'alma. Shareyin letloso bikin album. Ain bo kegrisva od. If the one on top is a shear that could have come from macholas, then ain tolano so me'alma, the shema dam kinahu. And if this didn't come me'alma, then the alma can't be the source of what came below. And therefore, the imesh betachton kegrisva od, shein letlos bikina, and close to bikina, to mea. Okay. Correct. It's when lo avar b'shuk shel tabachim and things like that. Then yudches kevan sheksamim the rabbanim mekila behem v'tolan osam b'chol davar sheyacholin litlos behem ketzad shochta behem avchayev aof o shenis aska b'ksamim o sheyashra v'tzadim is askim o sheavar b'shuk shel tabachim v'nin tzedam b'mvgadeha and even if it's b'mvgadeha ubesara tola behenu tahora afilu vesha shlosha chalukim zelze v'nimsa afilu b'tachton tahora avam nimsa b'sara alone. Eina tola ela im kain yesh la maka begufa oz tola ba afilu nimsal basara alone. Im hu b'makom she'efshal ladam linata misham va'afilu nisrabeis im efshal alizgala yidei chichol tola ba, that was Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah. Because of a rashba duha din nisaska mamish b'yadeh b'ksamim v'nimsal yadeh tolan b'hen. Right? So this is another demonstration, David, that it's not a gzeiras ha'kosov or gzeiras ha'mishnah of basar. If she was nisaska b'ksamim and then it's found on the yadayim, right, so we can assume, because the yadayim are exposed and she was dealing with the blood, that there you can be tola even though it's on the basar alone. Adin.
So do we not posit like the Rashba who said that that even if it's al b'sara, but she was al shuk, even if it was al b'sara only, but she was over al b'shuk shel tabachim, that since it could have like splashed up from under her legs, that we're not told of that? Because it seemed like the Beis Yosef was quoting that over and over, but...
I don't think that... I know what you're talking about, but I don't think that that was the Rashba's... I have to go back and look at that. I didn't think that... I thought the Rashba clearly held if it's found only on Bisara, he rejects the Raivin. If it's found only on Bisara, oh, you mean in that one, but you know, I don't think he accepts that, but you have to show me where is that in the Beis Yosef.
Yeah, I'll look
at it. I don't have the... Okay. Okay. Yudtes. Uchashem shetola ba, kach tola ba bailu b'mna. I'm sorry, Yossi?
What is the Rashba again saying? Is he qualifying?
The Rashba is saying that even though normally, when it's found only on the basar, you can't be tola. He says on the hands, when you would ask a b'ksamim, you can be tola. In fact, mistama, it shouldn't be, I don't know why the Rashba says, im nisaska mamish b'yadeh b'ksamim. Because if you went through a shuksha tabachim and you found it also on the adayim, well, the reason why you found it on the adayim was because your adayim were exposed. Unless he's thinking of a case where sleeves might have covered much of the hand. So he's saying even though it's covering much of the hand, if you dealt with tumim, we can assume it might have gotten up there. Whereas if you were just over b'shuk shel tabachim, it would never have gotten on this part of your hand. That may be what he means. Because otherwise it's hard to understand. The svara is clear that it shouldn't be only nisaska b'yadayim. I understand.
Once the blood's on the hand for sure, do we say that possibly she touched her leg, and that's where the blood came from?
No, I think the assumption is here that if she was nisask, normally if it was found only on the basar, you can't be told on an external source. So he's saying that nisask, if you nisask a b'ksamim and she finds it on, you know, on her thigh, you know, without being on the outer bega, you can't be tola. He's saying if it's found on your hands, you can be tola. So I'm just questioning, why did he say dafka nisask a b'ksamim? I don't remember. In other words, not only nisask a b'ksamim, it's even if avar shuk shel tabachim, if her hands were exposed, that and you find down there, the reason why it's on the hands and not on the begadim is because the hands aren't covered by begadim. So I would have thought that should be the case. All right.
I'm asking kind of a good question.
Yeah.
When we say that the blood on her sefa, she's not going to touch it with her hands and then touch her thigh, when we say that we know that she had blood on her hands at some point, and we find that dam or a guy, do we say that maybe she...
No, that we don't. That's called machzik and mibakam lemakam.
Even though the original source is her hand. Whereas in the case of like Mara, the original source is on her shoulder. And you have to say that you go from...
I mean, you know that there was dam. You know there was dam on her hands. So maybe we would say in a Hanami that's not called Machzikim Imakom Lamakom. Machzikim Imakom Lamakom means that we don't even know it came to one place, we don't assume it went from there to another. That sounds like it might be correct. In other words, it has to be able to go directly from the source of the blood to the place where it's at. So if we know there's Dam on the Adayim, then it's not Machzikim, where it's from the external source. We know. She was asking, well, maybe not. You don't know. No, I don't want to get into that question. I'm assuming that she has, we know Bivadol, she has dam on her hands. And now you find dam elsewhere, in Mechanami, maybe you could say. Maybe. Okay. Uchashem shetola ba, kach tole, bebaylo benoim, nisasku b'ksamo, m'yesh b'maka l'fisha darkan ligaba. Right? If they have, because it is very possible, assuming it's common they come in contact with her, and therefore their blood could have rubbed off on her directly. If they were engaged in the blood and there's no blood on them, then you, in other words, I like to think of this a little bit like aid me p'aid, when the first aid denies what was said, you know, later in the chain. Right, so if it's not on Bina Baila, how did it get there? Now, I think the Beis Yosef quotes those who say, but of course, if it's the kind of thing which splatters, where it's plausible that it wouldn't be on their hands, but it would be on someone else's hands, so I think that he says, yes, the Beis Yosef says, Umiyamo yasuka medava shadark linatis kigon shchita, chayotze vapshita sh'afal pin shalom nimtza v'dahendam tola shemanitas. Yes, Alex.
Two questions. The first might just be a product of modern sensibilities, but we often wash our hands, and so it seems like it would be, but it could be that they didn't.
Yes, that's correct.
So if it's not on the husband, then that's not because he washed his hands.
In their context, yes.
So then obviously...
And presumably she could also ask him, you know, when you were here before, were your hands all dirty with blood, you know?
Right, I mean, I guess it's the type of thing that, like, I might have blood. I could conceive in my own life, I could have something dirty on my hands that I would never would have noticed just because I often wash my hands and I have blood in my hands.
Okay, so yeah, but I think they don't have as easy access to water as we do.
Second question is, why exactly is the case where she's dealing with some, like, just can see sweat? Why is she...
She's laundering stuff. In other words, she got a stain in your garment, a fresh stain, and she's dealing with getting it out.
Yeah.
So we're assuming that it's like, ksamim here means ksamim of tseva?
Ksamim means ksamim, no, ksamim of dam even, of dam. But she's dealing with it, and it has to be, it's not going to be dried, because if it's dried, it's not going to get on her. Right? If you take a stain on underwear, when it's dried, unless you work really hard, it's not going to get on your hands.
And the husbands who are dealing with ksamim are probably with the cheskes rab.
Are?
Like they're rab, they're paskei on them?
Or no, probably, you have to find, probably they're dealing, maybe they're in the laundry business, I don't know. Yehuda?
So, would this work in the Shiva Nehiyam when we assume she's not touching her husband? She'd be told about her husband, don't she?
Less so. I mean, again, it's the kind of thing that requires him touching her as opposed to splattering or splashing, or incidental rubbing. You know, now I'd brush. I understand, but Liga doesn't have to be intentional.
Right.
So, it depends. It depends what you're assuming. If it was required to come from a deliberate contact, then the answer is yes, you can assume. Assuming that you're properly observant of the halacha, you can't be tola because you know he didn't do it. But if it's possible inadvertently, they brushed up against one another, something like that, so then maybe you would be tola. It depends. Yud Aleph. Emazikan lit lawat. By the way, I think I've said this once before. The letters in the tour aren't always in order because the letters refer to where it is in the Shulchan Aruch. And sometimes the Mechaber puts things out of order, or sometimes a later piece gets added to an earlier sif. So anyway, Yud Aleph Beis. Emazikan lit los. Mimakom lamakom kedapreshis lael shim yesh lamaka betzavar shiesh ladam lavo misham al shoka tmeav. In omrim shem anaga biyada bimaka venagaba bishoka. Okay. That safek avra, safek lo avra is not called a safek. It has to be safek nitas. So now, b'chasav Rashba, b'medvam, that's straight out of the Gemara. B'chasav Rashba, b'medvam, umi irsha tabacha, l'masaskim, b'ksamim, yoshim, rakam, yadua, avam darkam, l'sase, kan, v'kan, tolan, afilu, misafek, shem, nisasku, b'makam, sharafa, v'lo, hirgisha. So the Rashba claims in a city where you don't have the butcher district, but instead people work all over the place, and they really are, you know, butcher shops, and oskim, b'ksamim, who are all over the place, so then she can be tolam in a stam. It's a kula, but okay. Then, Ir Shachazer Mitsuimba in Koshishaba Laksamal Fishanovum and Avelos Shratzim Shiva Ashbos Matis and Adam Lemerachok. But because of Atoso Sheidna, Aindins and Noeg Beinenu, Shere Dabriaduashin, Hazer Matis and Dam Eshishrimem, Hayamatsu Shratzim and Avelos Mutalim Rachomos, Uvishvakim, Ayahazer Novum, Matis and Dam Lemerachok, Bakol, Lefi Ha'inyan. Alex, that I think is the crucial point. Behakol, Lefi Ha'inyan. It all depends on the situation. It's an evaluation of the Mitzias. Okay. Chaf Gimel, Chaf Dalet. Nisaska b'davar Adam, v'nimsa le'ash kesem shachar, o ipcha ein tolin bo. If, and the way I would formulate the Torah, if it's clear from the color of the stain that it couldn't have come from the type of blood color you were dealing with, you can't be tolin. B'amed v'amurim Adam b'shachar b'shachar b'adam. Aval Adam b'adam b'shachar b'shachar afilu me'inu nikar ma'amish shedom alo tolin bo. Kegon shenisaska b'meitilsen o b'mibasar o b'kilar Adam tzas tolin bo ha'adam. Now, my assumption is, even though the Ramban is making on the Torah following that, if you took the two colors and you put them one next to another, and it was clear that they're not the same, I think that you can't be tola. But there's no, firstly, you may not have access to the source anymore to compare. And if you don't, it's certainly, the Ramban says, it's not a problem. And it's not even clear, even if you did theoretically, you could go back and do a comparison, it's not clear that you have to. But I think, if it's clear that the two are not the same, absolutely clear, that's like Shachar and Adam. It's just that Minastam, we don't have to assume that they were different. So again, Mamadurim Amurim Adam Shachar v'Shachar Adam 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 Shachar v'Shachar Afilum Eino Nika Mami Shedomalo Tola Bo Kigonshin is Aska Me Tosan. But I would read that as saying, but in Nika Mami Sheino Domalo, you can't be Tola. V'imnis Aska V'Taranagolas Tola Bo Adam Shachar V'Karkume L'fi Shedam Shchitasa Adam V'Dame V'Rashachar V'Dam B'nei Me'er Karkume. Okay, upa'amim shetola b'min echad kamaminim. And this is like the lamala and lamata. In other words, this is saying that when you know there was an external source, and you just don't know what it was, but you know it's not coming from the isha, then you can assume there were other external sources as well. So therefore, kegon shenimsa la min echad sheyadua shalon esaskabo, v'nimsa lamala me'achagor. Right, there's a color, there's a kesem, lamala menachagor, more than a grisfa ode, and she knows that this didn't come from the makor, and she knows she didn't engage in anything that had that color. So shevadei ba me'alma, you know it definitely came from an external source. V'nimtzol la'akama minim, even lamata me'achagor, shoyse ruye l'tamas behen, nonetheless, anu tolim k'net, kimo she'osa amin shelamala me'achagor ba me'alma, belo yidiyasa, kach bo aleha me'alma, gam haminim shalamata mehachagar. Rabbeinu Chananu machmer b'zeh she'ein tolam mim b'she'ein omino. But afilu ledvarav, even according to Rabbeinu Chananu, im amin shemehachagar lamata hu me'os amin shemehachagar lamata tolam b'zeh b'zeh ki the precious el. That was lamala and lamata, el yon and tachton that we saw earlier. Umaskanas adoni abi harashzal ki divri Rabbeinu Chananu. Okay. All right. Now, we are moving from what I would call blood source to shear and tliya. In other words, now we're going to be dealing with situations when there's more blood potentially than you can possibly toll on something, or how you do the arithmetic, and two, when we're going to assume that the blood is metame somebody, but can you be tola on one particular person more than the other? So, the Torah says, "Shtei nashim shenis asku b'tzipor echad she'en bo dam ela kesela." V'nimsa al kolachas kesela, shtein tmeos. Why are shtein tmeos? Because you only had one cell of blood. This was the Gemara on the top of, I don't know, Chesam Adays. If you only had one cell there, and you find a total two slime of blood, then you know that one of those women got a cell of blood from somewhere else, and one of those women is tmea mishum kesem, and since one of those women is tmea mishum kesem, and you have no reason to assume that it's one more than the other, therefore, both of them are mikukalos. Nisaska pikagris, v'nimsa ba kikagris va'od. If a woman dealt with a gris of dam, now she was working with it, this is not being told on a kino, and then she finds a gris va'od, o shnei grisin, Semeya. Now, what's the chiddush of the Torah here? This is a chomer position. The chiddush of the Torah is that once, if you dealt with blood that you know about, you no longer consider anything about kina in that kesem. In other words, if I know that I dealt with a gris, we at this point assume that there are no kinim anymore. That is the assumption of this shita. I think this is the. The shita of the rush, which is if she dealt with a gris of dam, and she finds a gris for od stain, you know that the gris for od stain didn't come off from the gris. Now, what might you have said, by the way? What might you have done? Which the Rashba and the Rambam do? You say that the gris came from the dam she dealt with, and the v'od came from a kina, but apparently no, according to the rush. V'chein in nisaska. Again, certainly, if she dealt with a gris, and then you find two gris in v'od, well, everybody would probably agree there that you can't be tola on a kina. Why not? Because one gris is the dam she dealt with, and the gris v'od is too big for a kina. So that would be like a regular gris v'od kesem without nisaska b'dam, and she would be tmeya. V'rashba tier ben nisaska b'pachos mika gris v'nimtza aleh kegris v'od. The Rashba says that if you found a kagris va'od, but she dealt with, at least I'll say, a va'od of dam, something less than a kagris, so you can be toleh, you can reduce the amount of the kesem by the amount she knows she dealt with, even though she doesn't know for sure. I imagine, by the way, the Rash might be modeh, if she knows, not that she knows this aska b'gris, she knows that a gris of the blood came from the dam she dealt with. She spilled it on the garment and later finds a kagris va'od. Even it's possible the Rash would be miracle there, but here, she doesn't know. But the Rashba says that even menastam, she deducts the amount that she is asked with from the total size of the kesem, and if what's left is less than a gris or less, she is tahora. The Ramban said that even if she found two gris on herself, it's the same principle as the Rashba. Mistab and the Rashba, we know that. I think the Beis Yosef says that. It's Hainuha. If you subtract the amount that she was asked about, which was one gris, from the two gris total, you're left with one gris that's left over unattributed. You attribute one gris or less to a macholas. Okay.
Sorry, Mr. Shonai is in the Rashba.
What? No.
So no,
he means like the first shita that he presented. That you can, once you're subtracting the dam, once you have a kagris va'od, if you want to be tola, you can't be tola on a kina. You have to find that total amount of blood at least in order to be tola. If you can only get half of the shear, even though what's left over is less than a gris va'od, you can't be told of that on a kina. Okay. Matza lashnei kagrisin v'kina me'uchabo tahora she'agrisa echad v'adai me'akina me'uchabo v'agrisa sheni anutolonoso b'kina acheres kevin she'embo kagris va'od. So that really verifies what I said before, that even the rush, when we know that when you see the source of the blood there, you know the va'od came from the kina me'ucha. You're now allowed, then you can subtract that from the total, you're left with a gris, and you're fine. Alex?
Even if it was a gris for oath left, if we had to analyze the statistical probability of being bitten by a kina, I would think that if I wake up and I've got these things all over the place and I see one kina, I'm going to naturally assume that the rest came from a kina, even if it's a billion of them, meaning Alchas Kappa. Or if I don't see.
Okay, but you're not talking about... you mean on this.
You're right.
It's not... I'm suggesting for the Rush is a slightly bigger chiddush, because you're not actually... Again, I don't know, you're assuming that the fact that there's one gris here means that the other one probably came from a gris. I'm not sure if that's true or not. I hear. And as you're saying, that's less of a chiddush than what I'm suggesting for the Rush. There's a difference between... If I only was Nisaska, big gris, and I find a gris va'od, so I can't attribute the va'od to another thing I was in Sasebo, because I wasn't a Sasebo. As opposed to a kina, where one we can deduct it was a kina, then we can attribute the other to a kina as well. All right. Yes, there's a comment to that.
What's the logic to that, that we assume that a kina, I know that we discussed this a little bit more, but is there a logic that if we find a kina actually in the blood, then we can assume that there was another kina, but if we...
So the answer is because, but if what?
But if, let's say, we find out a Kagris, let's say she's handling like a gris, the ode, and she herself is not, she herself is doing less than a gris.
She doesn't ask a less than a gris, right? Why are they different?
Yeah,
well, the answer is because one of them, by nisaska, by less than a gris, you don't know that the blood that's there came from what she was nisaska bo. It's a tliya. But when you have the kina meuchabo, it's not a tliya. You're seeing what the source of that ode was.
So
right.
it's not that we're not more likely to assume that another louse was there in either case. It's just that...
We're allowed to subtract with greater certitude. And then we go back to the shear of gris. Yeah. Chav tes. Vehecha shahar ga pishpe sha'anu tolam bo ad ketormes chazar shear atormes le shear gris l'chal adinim sha'amarnu. Okay, yesh omrim shekaashav ein tolan kesem mishum davar sheinanu tolan ela bedomelo de'einanu bekiyim b'marei damim v'lo nehira. So this, I believe, is the shita. Thought it was of the Ravid. The Rashba quotes this. I thought he quotes it from the Ravid, but I could be wrong. The bizman hazeh we're not tola on anything. Why? Because you have to be medama. You have to do a comparison. And since we're not bekiyim b'marei damim, so therefore, whenever you have, and this is a principle which is accepted. It's a broader principle. Suffolk bekiyus is not called a suffolk. There's a discussion in the Pisrei Tshuva in this siman, I believe, about this issue. It comes up on the fact that why don't we say that every kesem is a suffolk? Because if you amavir the seven spices, the seven detergents on it, maybe the kesem would have been over and you would see, maybe it wouldn't have been over and you'd see that it would be tseva and not dam. So the Rashba, I think, himself says, even if you assume that the bedika works, which is a big machlokas, nonetheless, that's not a called suffolk, because a suffolk in bekiyus is not a suffolk. That I don't know how to do it does not constitute a suffix. So that is along the same lines here. That was the suggestion, was that we're not bekiyim, but he says v'lo nehira. V'lo nehira. He doesn't really explain why. Some have suggested, but this doesn't really. I believe that in the Pisrei Tshuva quotes under the Rashba somewhere says that's only if I'm Mesupak and Bekiyas, but if everybody's Suffolk and Bekiyas, if there's no one anywhere, that's a genuine Suffolk. The problem is, I think that the Sheva Samamanim, the Yamavir, nobody is either, and yet nonetheless we don't accept that as a Suffolk. But anyway, that's the cloud that's being suggested here. The Torah rejects it. 1 second, Zach. Ugedolim Yisrael Kasev Ramban, She'ena Tzricha Lahakif HaKesem Ladavar Shitalabo, Ela Tolem In Astam, Ad Sheteida Shezeh Shachar Vezeh Adam. There's no obligation to do the comparison until it's clear. He says that this is red and this is black, but I would argue if it's clear that the kesem didn't come from the thing you're being told on, that the Ramban would probably mode it. It's just that we're not bekiyim in red, so the odds are between things drying on the garment and knowing how things dry, the odds are we're not going to know. Yehuda?
What if you did some kind of chemical analysis and proved it was something completely different?
Pashtus is that it should not be a kesem. Yeah. It's probably... I've seen this discussed. So I can imagine someone saying, no, you can't do it because the bedika is only for taharas purposes. But the question is, maybe that bedika was only for taharas purposes. Partially also because the purpose of the bedika may not be to determine blood or tseva, but on the assumption that it's blood, the purpose of the bedika may be to be mevatel the dam, to get rid of the dam, even if some stains still exist. Once you get the mamushas of the blood out, it's not metame anymore. That's what it means for taharas purposes. But I would still imagine... It should be that if you could really do a test to know that it's not blood. So, in other words, it may be the Sheva Samamanim is not a blood test.
I imagine that under a microscope, blood cells look very different than red dye, for example.
I'm sure that, I would be almost certain that was the case. The question, how easily can be that, part of it's also a cost factor, right? And if you call the FBI in and the best forensic labs in the country, you could probably figure it out, but we're not Lamaisa going to do that. All right. Maybe somebody wants to go. Unfortunately, there's not much of a market for it because most of the time we know it's dam. In other words, for us, we know whether it's dam or not. But, you know, if you went back to the time of the Gemara, maybe you can make a fortune inventing a rapid speed test, you know, which would determine whether it's blood or dye. Okay, Zach.
Is there a marker that you know for this She'ein Anu Tolan of the Domelo?
Is that what? She'ein Anu Tolan El Domelo?
That's
a svara. It makes a lot of sense.
That in general, meaning that macholas is one shade of red.
I don't think that's what they're not talking about macholas. You don't know. They're talking about that if you avar b'shuk shel tabachim or nisaska with certain materials that look red. So there, they're saying you should be able to do. You should be able to compare. And since we don't know how to compare, I don't know why.
But are they comparing colors? Or is it
comparing colors? comparing colors. And in fact, I'll tell you what I think that someone says, but I did not see this in the Beis Yosef. I think it might be in the Pesachei Truv. I haven't looked at it in a long time. That it's not that we're not Bekiyim. Of course we're not Bekiyim to know what is red and what is not red. We are Bekiyim to take two things next to one another and say, are these the same or not? I think that may be in the Pesachei Truv. Well, let's see. Wait till we get there. Your job after we finish, we're not going to finish all, we'll finish most of the way today in the Torah, but your job tomorrow is to, it's sort of your call. I would start the Shulchan Aruch. I would start the Shulchan Aruch and I would just prepare the Shachs, and if there's specific things I want you to look at over the next couple of days, and then we will be finished with the, and we'll be done with the Samim. Kosav Rashba Yishmi Shahora Shaina Isha Hosheshes Mishim Kesamacha Tira Bibiru Shudam, the Kate Sariosa, Tavar La Shiv Samamanim, Avar Rezadam, the Mamar Rezetseva, and Hosheshesh. So the Rashba does not accept that. He says, Ain Roy in the Smokhose, El Hosheshes Lomenastam, Avam Havira La Shiva Samanam, Avar, Vade Torhish, In the Hadam Shaina Over Idesha Samanim, Bhushevi Ratan Kisidron Ad Khan. That seems to the Rashba's position, the simple reading of the Rashba's position. Is that you can be maveres dam. You can be maveres saman with the durance dam, l'chatchila, but until you do so, you can't be tola menastam. You don't assume. You don't assume that it's tseva. Yossi?
According to that first opinion, then
Kenya
woman is a woman that would never have saman. You know? Meaning,
correct. That's the reason why it's difficult. Take a look at the Beis Yosef. Okay. And I think that is what I explained before, that the purpose of the Havara is not to determine us only Tseva or Dam, but actually to make sure if it is Dam, that it's Batel and it's Tahor, even though the stain still exists, right? We don't say that you can't be Mitarid from Tumah, from the Tumas Dam Nida even, if the stain still exists there. As long as you get the Mamashas out, that's being Mavatel the Dam, and it's fine. Okay, Lamed Beis, this is shown in Betaros. This was the Gemara we did. Ha'isha Shaisa Osekes B'malachta V'nimtza Dam B'malkom Shavar Taso L'sasek Kamosha Asasa Imiz Damin Shetavar L'Vamalkom Shinimtza B'adam T'meyav V'malav Tahora. That's a Chumra. You're not shown in Betaros L'kula, but you are shown in L'chumra if it is possible. Okay. This is another extensive topic. Maybe we'll try to quickly deal with it. Again, it's not lemaisa for a very simple reason, which is what happens if a woman does bedika right after tashmish, and she either did bedika with an eid habadak or an eid she'eno badak, and what did she do with the bedika cloth afterwards? So our practice is not to do bedikos before and after tashmish, and therefore, you're not going to be dealing with this situation. The shaila will be, if she finds that it's got blood on it, where did she find it, what did she do with it in the interim, and what is the shape of the blood? So very briefly, ha'isha shayso sekes, I'm sorry, ha'badko be'atzma, lamed gimel, ve'eid ha'badokla, ulamachar matzah lav dam, afilu kol shehu, she did an eid ha'badok, which means it was clean, and she did a bedika, presumably, it doesn't have to be right after tashmish, but that one it might have been, and then, but she didn't look at it. Ulamachar matzah ladam afilu kol shehu, or she nichatu bekufsa, or she either, or she put it in. And this is misleading, actually, because this is normally the case. In other words, if she didn't badka atzma in a badukla, and she put it in a safe place, or she didn't put it in an unsafe place. Let's put it that way. It's really one case. The Beis Yosef observes this. It doesn't matter whether or not. The shape of it, the assumption is it was baduk before, it was placed in a careful place, and therefore it is dam ayide bedika, doesn't matter the shape, and she is tmeya. And even as the macholas ritzutza bo, the Beis Yosef goes through the discussion of the Gemara, whether or not oso makum is baduk menacholas, or, I forget what the other expression is, Baduk etzel osamakum baduk etzel macholah. So there's a different expression. I forget what it is. So the assumption is that until we have proof, we assume that it's dam through the bedika. Was there a question, Alex?
Yeah. Why didn't she see it that night?
Because she had no light, so she didn't check. That's why. And she just wants to know for the morning. She needs to know, make sure that she was Torah. And others, they did bedikos. Once upon a time, they may have done bedikos before and after Tashmish. When they were Asukim Betaros, they used to do bedika. The woman used to do bedika before and after Tashmish. Those are very complicated sugyos in the first paragraph, which we will touch upon in the next amount we're coming up upon about whether bedikos required for Tashmish and Isha Sheyesh Lavesus, Ein Lavesus, and so on. It's based upon sugyos in the first paragraph. When it was bedika required? In other words, the tsunuos were both goes before and after Tashmish, but and we don't do that, but that's when she would have been doing it.
Does that mean that in the meantime, until she can check it, she has to be parish for her?
No. No. So I don't think so. I think there's a machlokas beishamai beishil, in fact, whether she uses one bedika cloth all night is sufficient, or she's after multiple bedika cloths. But the assumption is not that you can't have Tashmish multiple times without checking.
And then the Maisa, the reason she doesn't do bedika just in the morning is because by then it could have...
Well, there's no need to do bedika. I mean, not mitzad Tashmish.
Why is she putting a cloth at night?
Well, if she found dam then, she would be tamea, even if she doesn't find in the morning.
So there is an amount of dam that she'll be able to see in the dark.
No, she's not looking at night. She looks in the morning. I did a bedika last night. Was the bedika Torah tamea?
Yeah, I understand. So my question is, why doesn't she just do the bedika in the morning?
Because at that point, the opportunity, again, the takana, the tsnuos used to do bedika before and after Tashmish to know whether they had violated Isser, you know, Bia Nida, whether he was a Boan Nida for Tumah V'Tahara purposes, and so on. But that was the practice. The practice was to do bedika before and after Tashmish. You just don't check to the morning because it's not practical. Yossi?
In the case where she puts the aid in a safe place and then there's a holus in it, so in that case, we still say that.
We still attribute it as Dam Haba Menamachor, yes. You can read the Beis Yosef. I don't want to deal extensively with it, but he quotes that sugya. I thought it was from the first parak about Osa Mako Baduku Eitz Macholas. Zach?
Well, I was going to ask about that, though. Can we have body lice? Possibility? Osa Mako, like, literally Osa Mako. Osa Mako. Literally yes.
Osa Mako, literally, yes. Okay, and then, but, v'im tachatu b'yirecha la'achar shabat gabo, o shenichatu tachas akar v'akeses, t'hashta ika l'misle b'dam kina shesnacha b'yirecha o tachas kar v'keses, hilkach, then, it depends, im hu agul tahora shavada ena b'dam akinuach, shem hayi b'dam akinuach haya mashach, o v'vad sheleo b'hei bo kigris v'od, avo miyesh bo kigris v'od, o she'em bo kigris v'od v'hu mashach t'mea. Okay, and then, the rush was machmer l'gamre, v'adoni avi arashal, kasa b'eira badukla, ותחתו בירחה שתמיה משמנידה ולפיזה אין חלק בין אגבי משך וחוני אין תמיה בכל שהוא only when you have perhaps an aid שאינו בדוק. Right? Fine. בדקה ואיד שאינו בדוק לא. So this now, so in general, if a woman puts on a chalukah which was not בדוק, what's the din? All ksamim are tahar. Because we'll assume they were there and she didn't know. But what about an aid which is in Obaduk? So, Kasav Rashba, Tahora, Afilu Bikigris V'od V'hu Mashach. He's very makel the Rashba. The Yeshmi Shehora Lahach... What?
She has an aid in Obaduk after Bedika, he's going to say that's...
Yep, because it's...
Because she didn't see...
Hold on. You remember one important thing here. She didn't have a known Hargasha.
We said all Hargashas are something.
Yeah, so what you could ask, also these bedikos, by the way, I'm not sure, you have to work through that sugi that we skipped over on, I think, Samach Amid Beis. It's not clear if these bedikos are real bedikos or they're sort of wiping. Which would answer your question, Zach? Not clear.
Then why would you call it bedikos?
Because she's checking. As opposed to kinuach, where the only purpose was just to wipe yourself, because, you know...
I think in Baduk is obviously Tahor, because what if it's from last time?
No, we understand that, but the point is, Zach is suggesting that this is a real Badika, being Tola like that, well, on what potential should be this Siddharaisa. That's why he's asking. That's why, by the way, V'yeshmi Shehor Lahachmir B'kegris V'od, which is still a phenomenal Kula Zach, because that's just the sheer, right? But that's more like a Dinin Ksamim, that you can be told a Gris V'od if it wasn't Baduk. So I think you may have to say that the suffix is not really needed, the Raisa.
So this is in a Bedika.
It's not a full-fledged Vedika, yeah.
So we'll say by a Vedika, even an ancient Enobadu. But what's the point of an ape? The whole reason whenever...
Well, that would be silly. The fact that she used an ancient Enobadu is silly. We understand that. The whole it defeats the purpose.
Yeah.
All right. Fine. And then the last thing we're going to read now, I'm going to stop with this. It's because of Rashba Yishmi Rabosai Shahu Sha'inu Nikra Ein Habadukla Ela Shabadkatu Velo Enichatu Ad Shabadkabo Av Enichatu Ein Zanirach Nikra Ein Habadukla, which is a very big kula. Shani Omer Kishinichatu Nichtam Velo Yirayli Ela Kol Shabadkatu Bein Hi Bein Chaverta Velo Noda Shanichtam Ba Kesa Mitzad Acher Velo Hevi Ratu Beshuk Shal Tabachem Velo Bitzad Amisaskim Iksam Ar Mezeb Cheskas Baduk Ad Kan. Right. If, as long as you don't put it in a, it doesn't have to be that you have, you know, 24/7 guard on the aid. It just has to be baduk. If it was baduk, if you checked it, and then you left it b'makom that's not likely attractive at kesem, so that's called an aid habadukla. All right, we'll stop here.